Milk seems to be an ordinary substance, and if you're a new person, you may be thinking, what's the fuss? And even our established congregational members subconsciously may be thinking, what's all the fuss? What I'd like to point out to you today is that through milk, you can build an entire cosmological view that includes both the material world and the spiritual world. And indeed, milk is vital for personalism. Now, those who are our regulars here know that we do not at all take impersonalism as the ultimate reality. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Vadanti tat tatvavidas tatvam yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabyate. I know so many of you have heard it. You've just finished your Bhakti Shastri course. So you know how the Supreme Absolute Truth manifests in three phases: as the all-pervading spiritual energy, Brahman, as the localized super soul in everyone's heart, and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, the possessor of all opulences. But how profound and how secure is that understanding if we do not see the place of milk in bhakti? Now, let me point out that, because you're all living in the city, milk does come from cows. And cows need to be nurtured. And a civilized person protects the cows even after their milking value is finished. Now, why would I say something like that? And what's the connection to personalism? When we look at the quotations from the founder Acharya, the establisher of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he presents milk in philosophical ways as well as emotional ways, in very personal terms. Number one, gratitude. That's the first emotion I want you to try to bathe yourself in. Gratitude means someone does something to benefit you, and it's just normal human etiquette that you feel grateful. Just think. The cow is nourishing us like a mother. And what is the way we show our gratitude? Now, of course, our congregation here in no way condones the practice of cow killing. But the question is, does our congregation support the principle of protecting cows and showing gratitude for the milk that mother cow gives? So you see, it's one thing to say how horrible cow slaughter is. It's another thing to say we actively support culture based on the honoring of milk from protected cows. So I know, in terms of our congregation, here, there, and everywhere, for a long time we have coasted nobly and righteously on the fact that we are down on cow slaughter. We hate it. We consider it abominable. At the same time, though, we felt that we were in a protective bubble because, after all, we're down on cow slaughter. But we didn't follow through all the way for various reasons. In other words, we haven't had the opportunity to take the positive alternative. Where is the milk from protected cows? We've gotten so habituated to condemning cow slaughter while, for practical reasons, we might say, while supporting the cow slaughter industry. Because, well, where is the alternative? Think of gratitude Gratitude is connected to indebtedness. Someone does something vital for you, you naturally feel that you have a debt. I wonder how many of us, when we drink milk, think, I am now indebted. Just like so many members of our congregation from stable families, traditional families, you feel indebted to your mother and father. How many of us feel an active indebtedness while drinking some milk or taking something made with milk? So these emotions of gratitude and indebtedness are vital for human civilization, what to speak of a spiritual culture that's based on the foundation of being human. And this was Srila Prabhupada, our founder's point. He said, at least be human, feel grateful, feel indebted, and feel shame and guilt. Now, in today's culture, of the first world, that is, shame and guilt is a no-no. You should just feel expansive in terms of your personal sense gratification, and don't worry so much about the damage you may cause, whether to the environment, to others, or yourself. Because if you embrace the hedonistic conclusion to its ultimate, everyone's in it for themselves, for their own skin. A civilized person feels indebted and is not afraid to feel guilty or feel shameful. Apply those emotions, please, to the milk situation. And looking at a statement by our founder here, who said, even if you have no human feelings, you should still feel shame. Even if you have no human feelings. In other words, the situation is at stark. Then there's a question of intelligence. The Vedas, the prime texts of self-realization, say that milk is necessary for physical vitality as well as creating the finer intelligence, sustaining the finer intelligence that's necessary for understanding spiritual matters. So we have the necessity of milk for putting on a spiritual culture, pushing forward a spiritual culture. If, somehow or other, unnecessarily, we are involved in a network of cow slaughter, it is not good for our brain development, what to speak of the brain development of the entire society. So please remember, because we are drinking milk, we're indebted. And we should feel guilty and shameful about a lifestyle that doesn't embrace this indebtedness. We should take note of the injustice done to Krishna's favorite pets. And here, we tie in directly with personalism. If you accept that there is a supreme personality of Godhead beyond the all-pervading impersonal energy, then you're accepting that that supreme person has his inclinations, his ways of doing things, his own lifestyle. Lifestyle is a very important word these days. Everyone wants a fulfilling lifestyle. What about Krishna's lifestyle? His lifestyle in the topmost portion of the spiritual world is all bound up with cows. What can we do about that? Now, of course, those of you who understand the bhakti knowledge know that there is a part of the spiritual world which is full of opulence and royalty and grandeur. But the topmost portion is a remote cowherd village named Vrindavan. And there, everything is based on cows and calves. Accepting Bhagavan Sri Krishna as the all in all means accepting his lifestyle, his proclivities, his inclinations. You know that Krishna carries beads, jeweled beads, for counting his groups of cows. He's got four basic groups: red, white, black, and yellow. And then 25 subdivisions of those four basic groups. That makes 100 groups. And then there are eight special groups, which are distinguished by the shape of their head, as well as being multicolored. Some of Krishna's cows, known as Mridangamukhi, they have a head shaped like a mridanga. Others are Singhamukhi, have a head shaped like lions. So that's 108 groups altogether. So Krishna carries jeweled beads when he's in the forest. And when it's time to gather the cows, he calls each leader of the group. Now, Jiva Goswami explains that Krishna can do this by playing his flute. He can call out the individual group leaders by the sound of his flute. And he can also do it with his voice. When the cows hear Krishna's flute playing, they, along with other forest animals, become so stunned that even though they're chewing grass, the grass becomes frozen in their mouth. They can't swallow the grass. They can't spit out the grass. They're just frozen hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. So much of Krishna's activity is based on cows and calves. They're his favorite pets. Those of you from India know Krishna is so attached to the Brahmanas and Brahminical culture, the spiritual, intellectual culture so advocated in the Vedas. And when you're offering your food at home and on the altar here, what do you say? Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitayacha. Krishna is the protector of the Brahmanas and the cows. Krishna personally is advocating that kind of culture. Go Brahmanya Hitayacha. But the acharyas tell us a very interesting point. And Srila Prabhupada didn't let us forget this point. Of the two, the cows and the brahmanas, Krishna likes the cows better. He's more fond of the cows. So as a bhakta, a devotee of Krishna, we should feel we're in a tight spot. Krishna likes the cows better than the brahmanas. Krishna advocates goraksha, cow protection, even more than brahmana culture. Indeed, the acharyas explain that brahminical culture, the spiritual intellectual culture of the Vedas, that all depends on cow protection. So you see, by our personalistic stance of accepting the ultimate supreme absolute truth as personal, we're caught in a tight spot. And that's exactly how our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, explained the point. He said, what can I do? This is what Krishna does. This is what the Shastra says. Once he even said, I'm not criticizing Western society, but what can I do? It's the Shastra that says this. And then Krishna's like this. What can I do? And he would even say, I know what you Westerners are thinking. You're thinking, well, cow protection, how impractical. Yeah, we take the milk from the cow, and it's a business deal when the cow is no longer able to give milk. Well, we don't know what happens. It's not our business. As one former president of the USA said, the business of America is business. So what happens to the cow after she's spent is not our affair. We go to the store, we get the milk, we offer it to Krishna. What more do you want out of us? We're working people, families, obligations, stresses and strains and responsibilities. And now we hear that we're supposed to feel guilty and shameful about the cow situation. Isn't that going a bit too far? I mean, we're all for it, yes. Protected cows, Kijai. But what are we supposed to do about it? It's just not in the arena of our affairs. So just think. The obligation of personalism is a burden of love. Any kind of relationship that's involving commitment is about a burden. But it's a burden that has flavor, has rasa. Similarly, the bind we are in about milk is very personal, and it's full of flavors. Not simply flavors in the milk, if it's real milk, but the flavors of our relationship with Krishna. And of course, Krishna bhaktas, devotees of Krishna, aspire to go to the topmost portion of the spiritual world, to Goloka Vrindavan, the planet of the cows, Gokula, the congregation of the cows. That's our aspiration. So therefore, this milk issue is something that is unavoidable by us. Then the question comes, well, Prabhupada drank milk from the store. So we're drinking milk from the shop. Why should we feel intimidated by this milk issue? But you see, throughout Prabhupada's time with us, he emphasized that we should have farms that supply our temples and restaurants with milk from protected cows. Especially the last 2 years of his stay with us, in terms of his physical presence, 1976, 1977, Prabhupada again and again would stress, farm, farm, farm. Every temple should have a farm. Just like, for example, when your dear Shastriwar Prabhu, when he met me in the New York City subway, what was I doing? I was distributing books, distributing prasad, and gathering funds to buy Gita Nagari. Because Prabhupada said every temple should have a farm. And so we took it seriously. As disciples, we took it seriously. And that was 1973 or 74, right? By the time 76, 77 came around, Prabhupada's call for farming milk from protected cows was even stronger. Statements like every temple should have a farm. He was encouraging this for everyone. And he even explained the relationship between milk, farms, and Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost portion, the most intimate portion of the spiritual world. He said, farm means intense love for Krishna. Just like in the remote cowherd village of Vrindavan. So he saw the milk situation as an opportunity to be more personal with Krishna. And that is how we should see it. I'll read you just some quotations from Prabhupada. We take it seriously because Krishna says, Krishna is our authority. We want to follow his personal behavior and instruction. Krishna comes as a cowherd boy, and he takes care of calves and cows. Why? He's showing us that this is ideal life. This is what we should take seriously. Because we're personalists, we take the lifestyle and inclinations and personal wishes of the Supreme Beloved with complete seriousness. And we don't allow ourselves to coast unnecessarily. You know what happens? in a traditional, well, Western relationship at least, India is still bound a lot by commitment, obligation, and all those things that the first world has thrown out decades ago. So in a relationship, one must constantly strive to come closer to, you want the dynamics of the relationship not to go stale or flat. Similarly, in our attempt to reestablish our relationship with Krishna, we have to be mindful of how we maybe have become lackadaisical, or that there are areas of the relationship that we can push forward with more than we have been. So in that way, I'd like to present the milk issue. It's all about personalism. How we can become closer to Krishna's dear devotee, our founder, Charashila Prabhupada, how we can become closer to Krishna. It's amazing how just through that one ordinary substance, milk, we can do that. Our impersonal tendency is to say, I'm focusing on the Supreme Absolute Truth, but I don't get caught up in his personal wishes or desires or qualities. I'm just a devotee of the whatever. That's impersonal. You wouldn't like someone to treat you that way. Someone who wants to become dear to you, you expect that they'll take into account your wishes, your proclivities, your particular characteristics. So that is what the Krishna Bhakta strives to do with Krishna. So we're always looking for ways to, so to speak, take our game to another level, increase the quality of the relationship. We're always looking for ways like that. We've heard how it was the desire of our founder, Acharya, that every temple have a farm, and he specifically said that the farm should supply milk for the city centers. So in other words, in the vision of Srila Prabhupada was this farm-city connection. We sort of also forgotten that. And naturally we feel that, don't blame me about the cow slaughter. What other options do I have? But just think, there could be an option available. And if there is, we should jump on it because it's a chance to be more personal. Just recently, for example, you do have, as you know, Gita Nagari 2.5 hours up the road. They're producing milk from Krishna's cows. But because the demand from the devotees in the surrounding cities has been so slow, what's happened? Actually, I could say the advice came from your illustrious temple president. I was mentioning to her that it's quite remarkable that our devotees take such a strong stance against cow slaughter, yet when milk from Krishna's protected cows is available, they're very slack to take that up. So she advised me, don't wait around for the devotees. There's so many non-devotees out there who are becoming conscious of the need for milk from protected cows. If you wait around for the devotees, you could be waiting a long time. And it was a fact. In this, outside of our little world of Krishna Bhaktas, as seen materially, it's a little world. As seen from the spiritual point of view, it's the vast majority. Outside of our little circle, the awareness of the horrors perpetrated upon cows continues to increase, and also the demand for proper milk. Milk that acknowledges indebtedness, milk that acknowledges gratitude, milk that will legitimately do away with guilt and shame. amongst ordinary Americans, non-Indians. The demand is escalating, so much so that the Whole Foods enterprise, which has hundreds of stores throughout the USA, they have come to Gidanagri, inspected the facilities there, and are right now finalizing a plan to take all the milk. Is that something? I don't applaud. Why don't I applaud? Why is it that Whole Foods can come and scoop up all the Krishna's milk? Why? Because the devotees won't take it. Isn't that embarrassing? The non-devotees who know nothing about Krishna and his personal desires are scooping up all of Krishna's milk, and we'll sell it to you at the Whole Foods market for more than what Gidanagri is charging. The two reasons that devotees give about their slackness is, number one, the milk, the protected milk, the ahimsa milk, it costs too much. You know what you're saying when you say that? You're saying, it costs too much to maintain our mother after she gives us the milk. It's more convenient to let her kill. We won't do the killing, but it's more convenient to get milk from sources that we don't have to worry about maintaining the mother. The second reason is, and I have commented about that, the slaughtered cows get benefit. I'm not going to go into that today. For those two reasons, excuses, you might say, the demand has been slow. So I bring this up because it shows us that we're being impersonal. Here we have the positive alternative on hand. And as devotees of Krishna, we take Krishna's desires so seriously. We take the desires of his greatest devotees so seriously. Yet somehow we become mesmerized and we fail to see the connection between milk, material wholesomeness, and spiritual advancement. Let's talk about the sociology. So many times our acharyas have pointed out that cow slaughter means no hope for civilization. Listen to this from His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. European and American society will be finished on account of this sinful activity of killing the cows. Comfort for the brahmanas is secondary, and comfort for the cows is Krishna's first concern. It's always nice to hear these things, because then we feel, oh, yes, I want to be more personal. I want to be more advanced. I want to take into account the desires of the beloved. That is what bhakti is all about, the yoga of pure love and devotion, the love supreme. If we can just consider this simple substance of milk as the gateway to a prosperous material society and to pleasing Krishna, how our life can change so much. Try to map out for yourself, by tracing the flow of the milk to your home, how there could be a lack of indebtedness, how there could be a lack of gratitude, and how there should be shame and guilt. We don't want to be oblivious to these things, because we want to make advancement in bhakti, and bhakti means taking into account the desires of the beloved. In this way, I hope that I've dissipated our constant notion that the milk thing is, okay, it is what it is, but it's not germane. It's not essential to our life. The spiritual practices and knowledge of bhakti tell us different. So if we have no alternative, then everyone has to decide what options they're going to take. But if we have a choice, just think. Srila Prabhupada was not in favor of agro-business. But what can be done if our devotees, they don't take the milk, and Whole Foods sees a market opportunity? You know what they said? Come set up at our Whole Foods store in Philadelphia, make your presentation, do your thing. Now, are they simply charitable and altruistic? You have Whole Foods stores in this area too, yes. Yeah. What's the nickname for Whole Foods? Whole paycheck. Or else, hole in your pocket. So they obviously are seeing that their enterprise can come off looking good, like on the cutting edge. They see a market niche. People are concerned about the slaughter of animals. They're concerned about the quality of milk. They sent their experts to taste the milk and cheese, and they said, wow. This shouldn't happen. Our devotees should be grabbing all the milk, grabbing all the cheese, so there's nothing left for any commercial outlets. If, for example, somehow or other, at least you can make your temple completely utilizing milk from protected cows, that would be a great step forward. As to what every individual does in his or her home, well, that's up to your knowledge, your realization, practicalities as you evaluate them. So my point is that there is possible progress, and that possible progress is tied to our spiritual advancement, devotional well-being. Through the milk issue, you can understand what is genuine material prosperity. Our acharyas, our spiritual preceptors, point out that the present human intelligence can't understand how cow protection is tied to economic prosperity. Admit it, we don't see it in that way. Srila Prabhupada would often point out, this is not religious sentiment, cow protection. This is the fundamental principle of economic expansion. So you really have to kind of stretch your mundane intelligence to accept this point. Wait a minute, cows and then economic expansion? I don't see how there's such a correspondence. But with spiritualized intelligence, we can take on that challenge. And then through the milk issue, that ordinary white substance, we can indeed see the basis of material prosperity and the basis of a spiritual culture. So in short, we have a great opportunity. And I hope that you all are aware that outside of our Krishna devotee circles, people are resonating with the need for milk from protected cows. The way Whole Foods is going about presenting Gitanagri's milk is like, this is the first milk in America from cruelty-free farms. They see a marketing opportunity. It would be much more pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, pleasing to the deities, if it's possible to take that milk instead of it going to commercial outlets. It'd be much better. Mm. And it's also very enlivening when we walk our talk. We feel better about ourselves, and we get more potency. I remember I was speaking at the University of Toronto, maybe 5 years ago. And it was about, the subject was the yoga of food. So, of course, I thought, well, we're uniquely qualified to hold forth on the yoga of food. I explained all about how our food has embedded intentions, the latest lingo I use. Because they're like chocolate factories in California, in which people sit around the chocolate after it's packed, and they meditate on it, infusing it with good intentions. Yeah, I read about it in the New York Times. So, also bottled water plants, you know, and a new agey people, you know. Our bottled water is different because we bring in monks, Zen Buddhist monks, and they meditate on the crates of bottled water before they're shipped out and embed the water with good vibrations. So they came up with a fancy term for it, food with embedded intentions. So there I was holding forth at University of Toronto, Canada's top school. Our food has embedded intentions. The consciousness of the cook goes right into the food and affects the eater. I was having a good time. Time for questions. Excuse me. We know that you, members of ISKCON, are against cow slaughter. Where does your milk come from? Well, you see, I was struggling. I wasn't going to say the slaughtered cows get benefit. I wasn't that far gone. But I couldn't come up with a good answer. I was stumped. So at that point I realized I had to make some adjustments, at least for myself personally, so I could stand at the podium with integrity. And then after I made some adjustments and began looking into this whole issue more deeply, I went back to that person who was the head of the Toronto Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. I went back to him and I thanked him. I said, "You made me walk my talk." He was shocked. I came back and said that. "You're making us better." And you gave me a wake-up call. So it's always enlivening to think how to serve Krishna better. Love is dynamic. We don't want to be stuck in the rut. We want to see opportunities for how to come closer to Krishna. And cows are Krishna's most dear pets. And as we said, Namo Brahmanya Deva, Go Brahmanya Hitayata. Brahmana culture is secondary, cow culture is primary. So let us think about increasing the love. We're bhakti yogis. We want to love Krishna more. We want to please Krishna by pleasing his devotees. So just looking at things from the love angle, if there's an opportunity through which we can come closer to Krishna, let's do it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.